The Corolla Drinks Wine Club is back, offering you the best deals on 3, 6, and 12 packs of Mangria. Aside from discounts on each and every bottle, with a 3-pack, you'll get a custom actual chicken shit ticket signed by the Ace Man himself. With a 6-pack, you'll get the signed ticket plus an exclusive shirt with every shipment only available to Wine Club members. We'll kick it off with the Ace Man's definitive Taco Rankings t-shirt designed by Corolla on paper. And with the 12-pack, you'll get the ticket, 3 custom shirts, plus a special invitation for you and a guest to the Corolla Family Summer Barbecue, held at our studio and hosted by Lynette and Adam. You'll eat incredible food, meet Adam, Brian, Gina, myself, and the lackeys, and get a tour of the ACS studio. Plus, you'll get to see each and every one of Ace's cars, including the magical 935. It all goes down June 22nd and is only for you beautiful 12-pack members. So head to CorollaDrinks.com and pick your tier today. Recorded live at Corolla One Studios with Adam Corolla and board-certified physician and addiction medicine specialist, Dr. Drew Pinsky. You're listening to The Adam and Dr. Drew Show.
Hey everybody, Superfan Giovanni here. Welcome to a very special 1,000th episode spectacular for The Adam and Dr. Drew Show. I'm here with producer Gary, man about Corolla Digital. How you doing, Gary?
I'm well, sir. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Thanks so much for inviting me to do this. We're doing a walk down memory lane of the Adam and Dr. Drew Show. Adam and Drew, this is your show.
There you go, 1,000 episodes. We had to figure out something to mark the occasion, and who better than Superfan Giovanni to take us back down memory lane through all the fun times.
And as the very first guest of the Adam and Drew Show, which we'll get to, it's very appropriate for me to be back. The show started back in 2012, so we're up over 6 years now. It started like the other spinoff shows, like Ace on the House, where the first few episodes aired in the ACS feed before they actually got their own feed.
Really? I don't even remember that. I mean, I totally believe you, but God, it's been a long run. I don't even remember that. I do remember when it was announced, and it was right around the time that Mike Lynch left, and he gave that show to Chris and I from the inception. So this is a special episode for me because it's, although I've probably produced thousands of episodes of podcasts, this is the first one I can think of that I've been part of soup to nuts for 1,000.
Your baby. Yeah, the original episodes, much like the first Ace in the House episodes, were Adam Carolla's show format almost, but it was just Adam and Drew solo one-on-ones. And they would put one out every week or 2 weeks. I think they did between like 8 and 12. And then they started doing this new version of the show, which started out as twice a week, airing on Thursdays and Sundays, the tentpole of the Loveline release schedule.
Yeah, I remember those decisions. Yeah, man, it's been a hell of a ride, and I think it's one of our better shows, and it's surprising to me every time I hear someone who tells us, "Oh my God, I didn't know you guys were back together."
Adam and Drew seem particularly frustrated with that bizarre fact that people still don't know that. You know, where's Loveline? I miss you guys. What happened? I want Adam and Drew. I want the love between the two hosts. Well, you can have it.
Yes, you can. Every day.
Yep, 5 days a week. And if you want to go back and get into the archive, Podcast One Premium has every single episode. You can go back to day one. You can listen to the full clips of what we're going to be playing today. We have a choice selection of episodes that kind of represent the journey the show has taken since 2012. And I want to start with Adam and Drew's show, Episode 1. What do you remember about this, Gary?
I remember being a little bit terrified. You know, not necessarily that I wasn't capable of doing my job, but this was the first show that was, you know, Adam and Drew, much like you. I know you were a Loveline guy. I was a Loveline guy. I used to, you know, secretly listen to Loveline in bed after my parents thought I was already asleep. So to be helming a show, Episode 1, with Adam and Dr. Drew, I felt quite a bit of responsibility not to screw it up, frankly.
Yeah, I mean, this is what everybody wanted. So people were really sad when Loveline ended. When Adam left, Loveline carried on without him, and then eventually ended about 10 years later. But they wanted more Adam and Drew, especially me. When Adam's morning show started, and I found out he was going to have a supporting cast the day I turned it on, and there was no Dr. Drew, I'm like, why did they just have Drew come on? Why did they just do Drew? And finally, our dream came true, and the guys were reunited. This was recorded back in November of 2012. It aired December 5th, 2012. Adam and Drew begin their new podcast series with stories about FUBU, journalistic integrity, and achieving the impossible. They also take your sex, drug, and relationship calls. Very good you guys threw that in there. And in this select clip I have from title episode 001, Adam and Drew introduce the new show. They talk to Gary and Chris. Drew gets reminded of Chris's real last name, and Adam talks about FUBU's brand decline. So, Gary, roll this clip.
Recorded live at Corolla One Studios with Adam Carolla and board-certified physician and addiction medicine specialist, Dr. Drew Pinsky. You're listening to The Adam and Drew Show.
You asked for it. You got it. It's me and Dr. Drew together once again.
By popular demand.
The first of many. So stay tuned, baby, because we're going to make this a regular dance. So, good seeing you there, Dr. Drew.
Good to be here. It's the start of a long, what is that saying from Casablanca? A long relationship?
A long, beautiful relationship or something like that. All right, couple
we'll
things.
We'll hate each other in a couple weeks. It'll be all right.
I had an interesting moment. It's interesting psychologically. You tell me how you handle this. Okay. Just all the people all the employees out there that don't like doing their job. I pull up randomly to different places that I own with different people that I employ in different acts.
Like different, the warehouses and...
I'm not there that often, and there's a pretty good chance I'm not going to be there, but I do pull up.
Yeah.
And so a few moments ago, I pulled up to the other warehouse, and Gary, not half-tard Gary, the one who works here, but full-tard Gary, the one who's working on the thing, I pulled up, and he was sitting in his car as I pulled up, not eating lunch or anything, just sitting in his car. Yeah. And Gary's an honest guy, and I don't look at him as a guy who's trying to rip me off. So I pulled up, and my first beat was, great, sitting in the car. Like, here I am. It's middle of the day. He's not eating lunch. Why are you sitting in your car? I'm assuming you're on the clock. And then as I pulled up, and the worst thing you can do, now it's one of these things. It's interesting psychologically. The worst thing you can do is what Gary did, which is see me get out of the car and go back in to do whatever it is he should have been doing. When you're Gary or anyone who's sitting in the car when the boss pulls up, start doing something in your car that looks like it might fall under the heading of official business.
Or official break.
Or tilt the seat back and just pop the collar on your shirt and just call it a night. Yeah. Don't do the, oops, you pulled up, shit, I got to get back to doing, because I've now seen the process.
Yeah.
You see, that's the whole thing. See, if I pull up 10 minutes later and you're back in the shop, well, then we're fine. Or if I pulled in 10 minutes earlier and you weren't yet in your car, the worst thing I can see is the transition.
Yes, you got me.
Right.
Gotcha transition.
Now, whether you're, sitting in your car on the clock or you're trying to, cop a few batteries from the corner drugstore, don't do a big flailing move as you're walking out of the place that draws attention to yourself. So now as I pull up, Gary sees me and Gary gets out of the car and walks back into the place and then sort of gets busy.
Now I can imagine what ensued.
No, I did not. I didn't ask him what he was doing.
No, I know you did.
I didn't want to shame him, but I wanted.
I'm sure you gave him the, all right, Gary.
No, I didn't give him anything. I just walked in and saw him sort of busily attempting to look busy once again. But anyway, again, if the boss man pulls up and you're in a position, stay there.
Yeah.
Stay there for a while, because then it seems like, I see a boss man. I'm doing whatever it is I'm supposed to be doing in here for a little while longer.
Or even play it like, wow, but this looks bad.
Yeah, just that's another.
But this looks bad. But I just took a 5-minute break. You caught me in it. Jeez, here's what I did this morning.
Another decent one. All right, so Drew, you came over. You brought food.
Brought you a Filipino food from a patient of mine. I saw patients all morning, and they brought in lumpia. Chris, look at Chris. He's all into it.
Oh no, is that what you are, Maxipata?
Yep.
What'd you call him?
Chris Maxipata.
Oh, that's right.
What's his name?
Laxamana.
Uh huh. Oh, you're Filipino.
Yeah.
Part, right? Part.
Part?
Full.
Oh, full.
100%.
Mm.
Oh, wow.
Are those, is that one of the good ones or the not good ones?
Nurses.
Oh, the nurses. Yeah. Oh, boy. Man. We got all kinds of nurses now. I got to say, when I was visiting my dad in the hospital, his nurse was a new gender and a new nationality every single time I pulled into that place.
Right.
It is wide open. It is not, like, what I'm saying is when you go through LAX and you go through security at LAX, you know what to expect. Not a lot of Swedes working that shift.
Same thing at JFK. Not the same ethnicity, but a reliable one.
But they're very reliable, and you have certain jobs you've learned to rely on. As a matter of fact, at least in LA, if the terrorists ever light off a dirty bomb at like LAX, it will take out at least 3/4 of the black population of Los Angeles. I do not believe we will have enough black people left to actually keep the race. We'll have to import black folks, because between the guys driving the shuttles and the guys working the bags and the guys working the security, it's pretty much it's FUBU over there. For us, by us, baby. Do you guys have a Filipino FUBU?
No.
The P would be tough to pronounce. You'd have to do a PH. Filbu. Do you guys remember FUBU?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think they're so hot anymore. What? FUBU was popular, seemed like about 10 years ago. It's like all the old black clothing companies.
It's been a couple weeks since I've been in here. Chris has already had enough of your shit.
I know. I wonder.
Have you been working hard? You've been doing a lot of podcasts. That's why he's just had an ass full of you.
He was. He's been going out and doing live ones with us, so he's had enough of me.
Oh.
I wonder if the whole Obama thing has taken the wind out of the sail of the FUBU. You know what I mean? Because you need a little bit of it's us against the man. But now, once the one of you is the man, there's no more you against the man kind of thing. I'm going to look into this FUBU. We'll see about buying some stock. All right. So, anyway, where were we? Yeah. Oh, ethnicities.
Food.
So now, a lot of Filipino nurses, right? Why is that? Small fingers?
Chris, why is that?
I don't know. My mom's a nurse.
Yeah. It's
There you go.
Yeah, and they're great. They're excellent nurses too. I don't know if they just saw an opportunity and really exploited it, and then they told their relatives about it, and it would turn out to be a good thing.
It's a good gig, right?
Yeah,
I mean, it's a weird gig, but it's a good gig. It's a little intimate for me.
You don't like cleaning bedpans and stuff.
Oh, all the stuff that's going on. Yeah. I mean, oh my God, up in there with the catheters and the sheets and the poo and the thing and the that, and oh my God.
It is a thankless job.
Oh,
for nurses,
my
it
God.
Really is. The physicians take all the liability, but nursing takes all the shit.
Literally, the shit jobs. And
get little credit for it too, because then when somebody's angry and yelling, who's sitting there? It's like being the receptionist at a restaurant,
right?
You know, that's the one that takes the grief.
Yeah. Except for they're not as hot as the receptionist at the restaurant, but yeah, they're all and the people are half out of their mind. They're old. They're angry. They want to get out of bed. They got shit strapped to them, and they're taking it out on.
Well, then
the
family doesn't understand the condition there, and they get angry with the nurses for not allowing them to do what they want to do.
Right.
Whatever it is, it's always our fault.
Right, right. All right, we have questions. What else?
All right, and we're back. We have another clip for you. This one comes to you from episode 9 of the Adam and Drew Show. Now, this is interesting. This was recorded on January 8th, 2013, and I was actually in studio that day just hanging out, watching what happened, and out of nowhere, Mike Lynch and you guys showed up, and you said, hey, get ready, you're coming in the studio, you're going to be a guest.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, people may not know, but it's not an often occurrence that you're actually around. You help us quite a bit, and you're always around via email or via text or via phone, but to have you actually in studio is something that in a good 2-year span maybe happens twice.
Yeah.
So when you're around, you know, it's especially with something like Adam and Drew, you know, right in the inception of that show early on, you know, under 10 episodes in, it only makes sense to have the Loveline historian step in.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting it, and I probably would have been nervous had I known it was happening. It just kind of got sprung on me, and I was super excited, and it's a huge honor to be the first guest of the Adam and Drew Show. And in this clip, Adam wants to know about a specific band, and I don't want him to finish his question.
I remember. Let's check it out.
Yeah. Get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get on. Mandate, get it on. Good to see you, Dr. Drew.
Hey, buddy. What's happening?
Superfan Giovanni has joined us.
I know.
Get on.
It's amazing.
What are you doing out here, Giovanni?
I came out for a special trip to drink Mangria and record commentaries on my vacation with my buddy, and we do it in San Diego. Mm-hmm. And then I was having Drew probably tape in the mornings, and I got a little mad. I was like, come down. I want to meet my two dads.
Mm-hmm. So I like that. Now, super fan Giovanni knows way more about Loveline than me or Dr. Drew.
It's true.
Yep.
Do. Someone was asking me the other night, what was the band where the guy
sneaker
got...
Sneaker
Pimps, where the guy got up and walked away and started to walk back to the hotel in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
Middle of Culver City.
It was awesome.
And then the next night, you guys played off-air audio of him yelling about it. And you guys trying to talk him down, the band trying to talk him down. He had no money on him. He had nothing. And he was found walking somewhere in Culver City.
But the good news is the Sneaker Pimps have landed on their feet with multiple platinum award-winning records and things like that, right?
There were many, many bands like that, weren't they, Adam? That we
call them the Incidents, and there's many of them. There's the Pennywise, the Sneaker Pimps, the Blur, Chumbawamba.
Uh-huh.
They're kind of endless.
What was Blur doing?
They were just kind of prickly, and he was educating you because you didn't know what you were talking about. You were talking about his last night's episode.
As I remember, he had his feet up on the desk. He was sort of sitting back.
Sounds about
that?
Right. Yeah. There's ones that people don't talk about. Like Nickelback came on, and they had insisted upon smoking a joint in the studio with you and Drew there. And so Drew's just getting smoked out in the studio with Nickelback, of all people.
Weren't they the ones that wanted to show you their Trans Am or something?
Plymouth Prowler, I think, is what he owns.
No. The Nickelback guy has a Plymouth Prowler, which is the worst car for the most retarded individuals. But the guy from Nickelback,
Chad Kroeger or something?
I don't know.
I think that's it.
Sounds about right. He had like a Plymouth, he had a Dodge Stealth.
Okay.
And he had a Dodge Stealth that was like 4 years old, maybe it was like, no, it was like 7 years old, because I stopped making the Stealth in like, I don't know, the early mid 90s or something like that. But he had bought a Dodge Stealth. Mitsubishi also made a version of it. And he'd bought this car. It was about 5 years old, and he probably got it for $7,500, maybe $9,000. I had just gotten, I think, a brand new BMW M3 or something crazy. Could have even been an Aston Martin, but it was something.
No, it was before that.
It was the M3. It was a BMW M3. And I just bought it, and I pulled into the parking lot, and the guy, Chad from Nickelback, was with us. And I was saying, Drew, look at this thing. It's got a straight six at 333 horsepower. And Chad was like, Stealth over there? I can open the doors automatically by just pushing this button on my keychain. And I remember I was looking at his car, and it was a used car that was 7 years old and kind of a piece of shit even in its day. And every time I would say, and Drew, let me show you about the bolstering on the seats and the six-speed transmission, he'd be like, this baby has automatic windshield wipers. Remember that?
Yes, and he went so far as to say, really, you should be checking out this. This is the vehicle for you, man. This is.
And I was
that?
Like, I remember that vehicle from 7 years ago when it was a piece of shit. It was such a weird.
It was weird. You were nice. You were not like outraged or condescending. You were like, I'm not so sure that's for me. You're like, but I'm kind of excited about this car. I just got it. I kind of know something about cars, and this one's flipping my cookie a little bit.
He literally made a deal about having the doors unlocked by pushing the button. Yeah. A lot of geniuses coming through.
Remember
that place.
At the drive-in?
That band.
Those are another
they way. Split up and became two asshole bands. The other band was Sparta, and they never came back.
Yeah, they kept going. They kept going. It turns out we thought they disappeared. But they were on the next night. We had this band called Linkin Park on the next night. Mm-hmm. And we were like, okay, those guys are going to be fine. Compare them to At the Drive-In in 10 years. Did we have that conversation on the air?
Yeah, no, there's tons of those conversations. There's a bunch of guests who are like going to do coke in the bathroom too. Like, I won't name them by name, but there's a few where they come back. You guys are hinting at that. And then the Pennywise incident, the second one where you're there,
Poo Poo City.
Yeah, we have video, the security cam footage. Engineer Mike gave it to me, and he was like, he says it's okay to admit that, but we have it, and it's digital quality, and you see everything. The cops there, Adam is taking a sip of his beer while Engineer Mike's playing an anti-drinking PSA because they can't stop swearing, and then you're hiding behind Adam. Drew's actually cowering behind Adam. A little bit. And Adam's sitting here, just sipping off the beer, and he's grabbing more beer out of the box. Like, well, I'm leaving at midnight no matter what.
So yeah, I must have been drinking Fletcher's beer.
Yeah. You just helped yourself.
Wow. There it is.
Wow, we have actual security footage.
I got this off a DVD with a hole in it somehow.
A hole in the DVD?
Somehow this software magically repaired it. There's only one, like two frames lost at the very end.
So you mean like a BB hole?
Exactly.
Wow.
It's all under Mike Hatt.
Oh, you
if
see
you
him.
Jump ahead, the action starts really later. That's Anderson's first night right there.
Yeah,
wearing the flannel.
Yeah.
I gave this to Anderson, and he insulted me and said, how dare I give it to him? Like, it's creepy that I had this. I'm like, well, Engineer Mike gave it to us because he likes the fans.
Anderson's first night.
Yeah, there's Mike
City. Can you imagine that?
Wow. Wow. It's crazy black and white security
That's
footage.
That's Jim, right? Jimmy, is that him, the guitar player?
I didn't even know they had security cameras at that place.
Yeah, all That's the how they knew, That's how they knew you you got to find this one. Yeah. That's how they knew you jumped on that console and kicked the shit
with
out of it.
With your muckluck.
Yeah.
You broke the air conditioner, yeah.
That was one of the great moments of my career.
Yeah.
That was one of the great moments
That's
of my
how they
career.
Knew it.
Yeah, these are – you can go to – I don't know. Where do you go to find this footage?
Pretty much nowhere, but I'll put it up somewhere.
Okay.
Well, why don't I put it up on
I
don't think there's any problem. Cool. Mike's cool with it. Yeah. Drew, you're the one that can speak on this. You're the one that works for
The cops were there.
I don't know that it's
we'll put it on
this
page. Right. On the Adam and Drew page.
Oh, Wait. So that's how they found out that I took my boot and my muckluck
they watched
and
it.
Jumped up. Oh, they watch it.
Yeah.
See, what happened, what used to happen all the fucking time is we would sit in our Loveline booth in the studio. And it would just be sweltering. It was just sweltering. There's a few things that they just couldn't figure out. Like, I'd say to them, we need new chairs. The chairs are so noisy. They squeak and they rattle and they're falling apart. We need new chairs. And they'd be like, yeah, that's not in the budget.
They're finally
or
a listener sent chairs
yep, from
us.
Minnesota, I think.
Illinois, right?
I always think Illinois, but Adam says Minnesota. I think Adam might be right. But the best part was when you guys were switching studios and they said, what about these chairs? You're like, no, I'm taking them or I'm setting them on fire in the parking lot.
I told those idiots, they're like, oh, those are our chairs. I'm like, fuck you, they're not your chairs, you idiot. So what happened, but the story that I forget about, which I absolutely love, is, I should remember to tell it more often. So we would sit in this room, and it would just be sweltering. And I would say all the time, what's going on with the air conditioning? Somebody needs to fix the air conditioning. It's fucking sweltering in here. And they'd go, yeah, no, it froze up. It froze up. When they keep it on, it freezes up, ironically. I said, okay, well, I know what – you know when people give you the – I don't know why adults do this with other adults all the time, where they go like, look, we need reliable transportation. Yeah, the car's broke. Yeah, I know. We need a way to get to the airport. Yeah, I know. The car's broke. I know it is. We need – how many laps do you want to do? Like, so I kept saying, we need air conditioning in the studio. They would go, yeah, it's broken. And I'd go, I know it is. Fix it.
Anderson kind of revealed it wasn't actually broken. They just didn't want you guys tampering or monkeying with it.
Somebody needs to fix it. And it'd be too hot in this closet we're in with all these lights on us. It's just there's no ventilation. So at a certain point, I don't know, maybe they did fix it or something. And then I walked in and I said, it's too hot in here. Turn the fucking air on in here. And Anderson said, can't do it. And I said, why? And he said, because they keep the thermostat in one of those little Lucite lock boxes sitting, it's on the wall, and I can't get into it. And I was like, well, get the key, open it up, and turn the thing down. They don't give us the key. I said, oh, they don't give you the key, huh? Oh, okay, I got a key. And I climbed up on the console because I needed some height because the thing was like 4 feet up the wall. I just kicked it off the wall. I just booted it.
Was it one kick? It was bam, 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 like really
no,
bashing
it. No,
it
was one kick.
I remember you bashing
it. It went flying. All right. And
watch the footage.
Then I said,
check the tape.
I said, there it is. Well, now we can access it. And then.
Were you aware, or in retrospect, are you aware, you were a bit agitated that night?
Probably.
Yeah, but, okay.
Chances are good.
Yeah.
Well, I had had enough.
But you were agitated before the conversation with Anderson. I think you probably had talked to Terry, don't call me Tara, goddammit, maybe seconds before. That might have escalated you a bit.
I had had enough of the fucking lethargy and retardism and stupidity that was that place. Like when I said, for instance, remember when they built the movie theater around us like
oh, yes.
a Bugs Bunny cartoon?
You had the plywood over the holes in the ground.
Was it Kathy Griffin that was complaining about being raped out there?
So somebody took a tumble, too.
Well, what would happen is if the person in front of you stepped on the front piece of plywood, it would kick up because it was warped, and then you'd kick it if you're walking 8 feet behind them, and then you'd trip over it. So they would step on it. It would roll up.
All right, and we're back. Now we have another clip for you. This one comes to you from Adam and Drew Show, episode 13. This was released back at the end of January 2013 with Diane Farr. What do you remember about this one, Gary?
I remember being a little struck. I was a big fan of Diane Farr from Rescue Me. That was where I knew her from. I was never a huge Loveline TV show fan. I would catch it every now and then when I was flipping through the channels, but it wasn't appointment viewing for me. Something about the TV show, to me, seemed like a bastardized version of what I loved on the radio. It just seemed like they were a little bit too controlled. They had not that it was their fault, but it just seemed like the format of television and the commercial breaks and the length of the segments just sort of forced them a little bit more into a box that was just, in my opinion, kind of a poor man's version of what I loved on the radio, where they had a little bit more leeway and a little bit more freedom. So I knew Diane from Rescue Me, and I had always been a fan. I thought she was a great actress. And I was a little starstruck, you know. This was 2013 was still somewhat early in my tenure in the podcast industry, and it was crazy because it was not only a celebrity, but it was also someone that Drew and Adam were clearly legitimately friends with.
Yeah, she was the longest running female co-host of the MTV show, and it's interesting you mentioned your feelings about that because I had the MTV show before the radio show. Being a local L.A. person, I think it's a lot easier for you to get exposed to Loveline. It's an institution. With the affiliates, it wasn't necessarily something that you would know about unless you knew about it. So you wouldn't unless you found it or somehow knew about it or originally, you're not going to find the show. So that MTV show was my introduction. And she joined them around, I think, season two. And then she lasted over 200 of the roughly 400 episodes.
Yeah, and more to your point about the radio and being aware of it, you know, at that time in L.A., K-Rock was kind of the only game in town if you were under the age of 50. So if you were a kid in Southern California, K-Rock was what you listened to as a kid growing up in the 90s. That was just what there was.
Yeah, Joseph Gordon-Levitt coming on Loveline, he's singing the K-Rock jingles. Like, he's such a huge fan, so anybody local knows all that stuff. And I've been exposed to it through archiving. But on this episode with Diane, she reunites with the guys because they haven't had a lot of contact in the years since doing the show. She tells them about her marriage and her multicultural family. It's a really interesting chunk from the episode, and it's just kind of sweet to have them back on air together.
Well, let's hear from Diane. Let's hear our friends catch up.
Welcome to the program, and welcome old friend Diane Farr.
Hello.
One of our favorites. Diane was our co-host on Loveline on MTV so many years ago, but we've all kept in touch, and Diane has gone on to great things. Rescue Me, Californication, you see her on occasion. Kissing Outside the Lines.
Numbers.
Latest book.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, tons of TV.
That's the difference between you two right there. Numbers would be Drew. Californication, Rescue Me would be Adam.
Diane has twins. Diane has a young son. Diane is married to a Korean-American fella whose name escapes me because it's a very escapable name. Remember when the Asians would just go, like the guy would be like, I'm Kim Chi. No, you're Jake. Now you're Jake. You're Joe. Like, we used to do that. Like, I went to junior high with a bunch of like Japanese guys that were just named Fred, but I was like, that's your name? And then they were like, eh. They just gave
Not
it
really.
To him. But your husband's name is?
Sing. Like sing a song, which is even worse because he still has the Asian name. The Asian name is Sung. But when he moved here, nobody could say Sung.
So he went with Sing.
No, the kids started calling him Sing on his block, and it stuck for 40 years.
So he's sticking with Sing instead of Sung.
It's old school.
Well, it's even worse because his actual name is Sung Yung Chung, which
right.
all horrifically rhymes. And like when we were having the kids, he was saying
If Adam had come up with that name for your husband, you would accuse him of being racist.
Thank you.
It's true. And sometimes I accuse his parents of just trying to end his American experience. And they wanted to give our kids Korean names, which would be like, you know,
his
middle
parents.
Name. And at first I tried to be gracious and say, yes, you can give them any name you want. No one's ever going to hear it.
Did his really parents funny. Have any? Koreans can be intense, Korean parents.
Oh,
and,
yes.
And did his, I love that euphemism.
I wrote a whole book on their
and this is very cool. This really feels like a reunion. It's been a long time since we've been together.
Koreans are some of the toughest, most tenacious people on the planet.
And the easiest way to say it is they're some of the most insular. They want to deal with just each other.
Well, that's what I was going to ask.
They don't need any other culture.
Okay, so here you are, tall white chick,
yes.
entering that. How did that go down?
I wrote a whole book on it. It was so uncomfortable and amazing. And thank God I didn't even meet Singh until I was 35 years old, so I could have a little bit of a laugh at the whole thing.
Yeah.
Because a younger
run into that at 19, it would have rolled you over. And,
and I would have fought like against two grown people who lived in a tiny little, you know, parameters of how the world should be.
How far are they away from you physically?
Oh, it's so bad. They were in Korea.
Oh, good.
Until about 6 months ago, and they moved here.
Ooh.
They moved 30 minutes away, and they do the traditional Korean thing where the dad really lives in Korea, and the mom really lives here, and they call that marriage. And they visit each other about 8 weeks total a year, and then condemn Americans for divorce.
Right.
As if when your husband lives in another country for 10 months out of the year, for 30 years, no, I'm sure he's never stepped out. I'm sure that's been a completely monogamous relationship. And my parents got divorced after 35 years. And the first time I met some of the really intense aunts, because you know in Korean culture, everything's about age and gender.
Mm-hmm.
It's about the oldest male and his wife. And then the pecking order sort of goes down from there. So Singh's mother is one of eight, and the father's one of eight.
Mm-hmm.
And sadly, they're both in the middle. They have no juice.
Let me play devil's advocate for a second. Maybe they're onto something here. Maybe we expect too much of marriage.
Well, look, I mean, this is the ultimate, you know, I've said to people, you know, when they talk about, you know, keys to success in marriage, I say square footage and two TiVos. I mean, listen, we've all had the situation where you're living with the girlfriend or the boyfriend. You have the one bedroom or worse, you know, the bachelor, the flat,
studio.
You know, the studio. And the fucking arguing never stops because you're living on top of each other. I mean, you would do that with any other human being. If you and your roommate slept in the same room and that was only one room, you'd be bickering nonstop. So a little square footage, a little of I'm going upstairs to watch Numbers and I'm going downstairs to watch SportsCenter does. So this is an extrapolation of that, but it's the ultimate one, which is I'm going to Korea, bitch.
Yeah.
I'm out of here. And there ain't a lot to argue about when you're in Korea and she's in Sherman Oaks.
No. And you subscribe to the 1950s theory of mom's job is raise the kids, get them the best possible education and sacrifice all feelings.
Yes.
Emotional, sexual, any.
Miss those days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's over, Adam.
Speaking.
All right, we're back. And we have another clip for you. This one comes to us from the next episode, actually. Adam and Dr. Drew's Show, episode 14. This was released in early February of 2013. This one's titled David Alan Greer because it features David Alan Greer. He came by for two episodes. This is from the first one. In this clip, Adam and Drew talked to Dag about his relationship with his brother, something they never really discussed back on all of their Loveline appearances, and then they kind of go in depth on the evolution of careers in show business and how things can kind of go wrong for people involved with comedy.
This was a strong run of shows here. Diane Farr followed by David Alan Greer. This was an excellent one. I mean, listen, Dag's a fan favorite. There's just no way around it. He is so funny, and it doesn't matter if he's, you know, doing one of your favorite characters or if he's just talking to the guys and reacting to whatever the story that, you know, the topic of the day is.
I love Dag it when Dag gets real. Yeah, that's
yeah,
great.
Whenever absolutely.
He gets real about something. And he's actually the most frequent Loveline guest in the history of anyone ever appear on the show. He started appearing in 1998 and would guest on the show all the way through Adam's departure. And even when Adam came back to guest after his departure, Dag showed up one time. He's beloved for a reason. Check out this clip with Dag, everybody.
How long we know Dag?
Oh, boy. More than 15 years.
Never mentioned his brother before.
Oh, no, no.
Not to me.
Adam knows.
It's come up half a dozen times today.
He's brought him to Kimmel's a couple of times.
All right. Okay.
Yeah, it's come
up. So you guys are closer in recent years.
We talk several times a day every day.
That's a new thing.
All the time.
Several times a day?
Yes.
Wow. Why so much?
We're just...
It's always been that way?
Well, it's been that way in the last, I'm trying to think.
4 years.
No, once he got sober. Once he got sober and I knew but he's been sober over 20 years. I never would have thought over 24 years, but I mean, it's all of my friendship with you. I always talked to him a lot and I didn't really realize until I started talking about it. But he, you know, he knows me. We share a, what am I going to say, a childhood together.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That's just the way it is. I don't talk, he's the closest person in my family.
So when your phone rings and you see it's your brother, you think, good.
Usually, right. I talk to him on the way here. What's up, man? Going into work. And he tells me stories about my nephew who's 17, which is awesome.
Oh my God.
Which he said, the newest one, he goes, well, like, I'm going to go to junior college, you know, for like 6 months, and I'm going to Stanford. Well, we almost ran off the road. He was like, good luck, man. Love you. Love you. Good luck.
Dag, let me ask you a question. A serious question. As I think about you all the time, and I'm working on my next movie. You're my best friend. You're co-starring it. I know it's been brought up before.
Why is that so fucking funny?
But you're going to
star in it. Because it's going to be good.
It's going to be good.
It's going to be funny.
It's going to be good. And the general theme of it is guys, and there's a lot of them, if you think about it, who had a lot of success in the 90s when there was a lot of holding deals.
Oh, yeah. Those are
and development deals. Like, literally, people, everyone who's home, struggling, husband's out of work, trying to make ends meet, all that. There was a time in the mid-90s and the late-90s when they would tell a guy like David Alan Greer, here's $1 million. You don't have to go anywhere. You don't have to come in. You don't have to do anything. Just don't do anything on another network for a year.
I had a deal, which the deal was, we're going to give you a script for a TV show, but you can say no. We're still going to pay you. And we're going to give you 3 roles in a movie, and you can say no, and we'll still pay you.
Right.
I was like, okay.
And there was development. There was development deals, which is we buy you an office on the lot. Here's $1 million, and like at the end of 6 months, they'd go, "Any ideas? You got anything?" And you go, "Not really." And they go, "Okay, sorry, we didn't mean to pressure you. Here's another check."
Yeah.
And then 6 months later, at the end of the year, they'd go, "Anything at all?" And you'd go, No, not really.
You had to pitch a little bit. You're like, what's your idea? It's like, these two motherfuckers, right? But they like each other, but they don't really like each other.
Yeah, they're cops.
But then they like, you know, looking at each other. It's
right.
Like, what's up, man? What are you doing?
Yeah, it's like edgy. Like but that. It's also funny.
But by the way, no hyperbole in this.
Yeah, no.
That's
but now,
truth.
Now those deals are done.
Yeah.
Now those deals are gone. And some people got out of it, you know, like my buddy Phil Rosenthal from Everyone Loves Raymond. He got out of it with, you know, $100 million.
Ugh,
and then there's others who bought houses and got divorced and didn't save all their money and so on and so forth. And those dudes have to hit the road now.
Well, the darkest version, there was a guy who wrote for In Living Color, writer, staff writer, had deals, had the house, young wife, got married, deals dried up, said, look, honey, let's move to, I think it was Ohio, downsize, no money, no deals, new baby. They found him wandering, incoherent.
Oh.
He hadn't bathed for
in
7
days. Did they make it to Ohio? Oh, jeez.
Killed the wife.
Oh, my God.
The baby was in the house.
Really?
Yeah. This is in the news.
A lot of these guys, some of these guys.
That's the dark, you know, dark man.
Some of these guys are killing themselves. I mean, look at what stand-up comedian who killed himself a few years ago. Platypus Man. Oh, we'll come up with his name in a second.
But Richard Jenny. Brilliant. But he had.
He had bipolar.
He was so mentally ill, unbeknownst to me. I mean, I've been an acquaintance of his for years. I'd always heard he was like challenging, but no one ever. Apparently, it spiraled out of control. He always worked, but he was severely mentally ill, from what I understand.
Obviously, there needs to be that component. But what I'm saying is you are in your 30s. You're getting development deals. You're looking good. There's chicks all over the place. You're making tons of money, and the world is your fucking oyster. And now you're 51, and the deals are behind you. There's no more sitcoms they're going to name after you. You had a shot. All these guys had a shot.
But you're saying they need to form a podcast network.
They would all podcast tell network. You.
Yeah, no, this
they
would is all, not. I think, Adam, you're saying these are people that don't have the option, actually, to go on the road. They don't have the option.
No, they can't do anything.
No, what it is Richard Jenny has to go back on the road, but he's 52.
Yeah.
Right. And he stopped. They used it as a springboard to get into Hollywood. Right. And they stopped doing it at 33 and went, fuck this. I got a development deal. I'm doing a sitcom. I got a movie role.
It. They didn't. It was...
No, and now they're 51 and they're in Addison, Texas at the Improv. And
been there.
Been there, too. Times.
Wonderful been, strippers, by the way.
Been there, too. That's wonderful strippers. My point. That's anyway.
Beautiful. Oh, my God.
That's,
yeah, but most of the writers, this is why they go crazy. They don't have the option. They're fucked.
I am talking about people you recognize, performers, right, big names, people that are forced to, you know, Pauly Shore, Tom Green, guys that are forced
wonderful,
to hit the road.
Talents,
no, I'm just saying, they're forced to hit the road. They don't want to hit the road. They have to hit the road, and hitting the road at 33 is different than hitting the road at 49 or 53.
You don't have to tell
especially
me.
Especially they didn't
want that's
you have
my
to tell
point.
Me. Here's my dialogue. Here's my dialogue last weekend. Dave, you want another drink? Are you kidding me? I had two beers. I was like, I have to go to the bathroom, okay?
That's
I have
right.
another set.
All right, everybody. We are back. We have another clip for you. This one comes all the way from Adam and Drew's show, episode 100. This aired in December 2013. On the 100th episode of Adam and Drew's show, Adam explains some of the policies he would like to see if he were president. They also take a deep look at the history of President John F. Kennedy. And in this clip, I want to focus on the JFK part. It's an interesting format departure for this show, but also just more of an example of what this Adam and Drew show can be. It can be hilarious, it can be like a modern version of Loveline, and it can also be this really interesting exploration into topics, much like they used to do on Loveline, like the opening segment or when they didn't have a guest. And in this, they go really deep and analyze some newly unearthed accusations at the time regarding JFK.
Yeah, looking back on this clip, I would say that this clip sort of informs what the Adam and Drew show evolved into. Not to say that it isn't the same as it was at episode one, but it has grown and evolved as any living thing does. And I think this is a good look back at into sort of where they started and how they expanded their horizons.
And this is the only clip I doctored where I removed a call from a listener because you were tasked with searching for a clip and scrolling through a timeline. So in real time, you had to find them the exact thing they're demanding. So I just took that one phone call.
I'm getting the anxiety now just talking about this. I remember that episode very, very well because that was a deep dive. And we pulled it off, but those searches are anxiety-provoking if anyone can't imagine that.
Roll the clip, Gary.
All right. Thoughts, Drew. What's going on?
I got a lot of weird little thoughts. Did you see all the JFK stuff? First of all, I'm exhausted. Mm-hmm. I had to pick my daughter up at the airport last night and on the way home. Freeway closures.
Right.
No warning.
Yes.
And then circa 6:30 a.m., my wife's sick. She's kind of not sleeping well.
Mm-hmm.
You're snoring.
Oh, you're snoring. She told you you're snoring. Yeah.
So did not go back to sleep. So I got 4 hours of sleep. So mm-hmm. That's fantastic.
All the JFK stuff. Yes.
All the JFK stuff. Did you get into any of that stuff? Did you find it interesting? Or?
I don't have as much reverence for him as other people
well,
do.
Funny you would say that because somebody sent me there's sort of a synopsis of his medical records out there now.
Mm-hmm.
He was not psychiatrically a well man at all. I mean, he may have been a good leader and whatever and good administrator, but here's how I put together what I read. At a young age, very somatically preoccupied, lots of bowel problems and back problems and physical problems. That's a psychological thing when people get like that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you're a special person, you're the son of Joe Kennedy, mm-hmm. you get special attention. Well, guess what? Now he's getting aggressive treatments for ulcerative colitis and for his back diseases. They started injecting him with high doses of corticosteroids, which right around then was thought to... Can I tell you this whole story? Because it's kind of interesting.
I'm interested. Hey, yeah. Gary, you can find the 60 Minutes story of his young intern girlfriend and some of the beats on that. I think it aired about a year ago.
Yeah, she came out about what happened.
But but go ahead. You tell your story.
And this sort of more on that same line. High doses of corticosteroid, prednisone, which at the time was on the cover of Life magazine, the miracle drug. We didn't mm-hmm. know all the side effects. It shuts down your adrenal gland, mm-hmm. and it causes weakening of the bones and osteoporosis. Fast forward 3 years. Oh, my God, he has Addison's disease. His adrenals are shut down, and he has osteoporosis.
mm-hmm. from all the shit everyone was giving him.
Right.
Now they start putting him on more steroids to cover for the adrenal insufficiency, which is all bullshit. He did not have Addison's. They couldn't make a proper diagnosis back then. Did not have it. He probably did have osteoporosis. Now they start doing back operations, which are the latest thing. We got to go. Right. Special son of Joe Kennedy. We got to do something. They put in hardware. It gets infected. They have to take it out. He has abscess. Now he has a real reason for pain. Now guess what's going on? Now it's game on with the pain meds. Full game on.
Mm-hmm.
Long-term polyopiates, injection of Demerol. Now he's weak and tired from all this, for the pain meds and steroids. They put him on testosterone and stimulants and amphetamines.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was on so much shit. And this was when there was great enthusiasm about all this stuff in the medical community and not an understanding of the psychiatric consequences and the nature of addiction and somatizing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is a really seriously ill psychiatric case. Well, it's psychological problems meets what's called iatrogenesis, which is doctor-created illness.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a poster child. I can't believe the dude functioned, let alone – you know, it's amazing that he was able to get through and administrate and do the things he did.
Well, they probably had the alcoholic gene, which lets you do that.
Yeah, yeah.
I, you know, maybe I'm just a huge douche, but first off, you know, when they turn – and Jackie Kennedy's always – you know, she's a hero to everyone too. I don't – you know, she married the richest man on the planet when – after this – she lived in semi-seclusion. I'm sure she did her fair share of charitable work. Mainly, they were a really good-looking couple,
right,
which I think everyone responded to. I don't know that she did any more good than Eleanor Roosevelt, but yet she looked so good and so young, and there's a lot of talk about her White House and how she redecorated.
It's true. She did do a lot of stuff there. But what difference does that
she
make?
She paid...
Yeah.
She had – we paid for somebody to redecorate her White House.
Right.
I she brought a vibrance, a youth, and a sense of hope. Like, I that doesn't mean shit to me.
Right.
I don't know what that is.
Right.
You know, she carried herself with such a dignity.
Yeah.
You know, like, all right.
That and 50 cents.
Right. Yeah. I want to hear some – I want to hear some stats. You know, for me, everything – this is why I love the meritocracy of sports. You know what I mean? It's like – this young point guard carries himself with so much dignity on that court. He brings a sense of hope to the team and the fans. It's like, I want to see his shooting percentage.
Yeah.
I want to see what he's like outside of the three-point arc. I just want to see some numbers. Oh, forget about – no. Don't get focused on that. Look at him in that uniform. Yeah. Striking, isn't he? Look at that jawline.
And let's be fair. It's the martyrdom of the whole thing. You know, the fact that he was shot was what created the myth, right? No.
No, I'm looking at – there's I don't think it was Rock Center. Maybe it was Rock Center. I thought it was a 60 Minutes report.
About the woman that had an affair with Kennedy, one of the many.
Yeah.
And by the way, that goes along with the addict stuff.
No. Gary saying no.
You put in the chick's name, you put in JFK intern affair, you put all that with 60 Minutes, and you get nothing. But if you put her name in, it comes up with a Rock Center
Ryan
Williams.
Oh, a special edition Rock Center. All right. Sorry. My bad.
But then, you know, the sexual compulsion, sexual addiction stuff goes along with the somatizing, goes along with the opiates.
Right. So anyway, back to whatever. Look, I don't know. Some presidents did better than other presidents. He's revered. I think from the grave, he has like a 97% approval rating.
Yeah, I think a lot of that not being happy with him when he was in office.
Well, I don't remember any of that. I just remember he was young. He looked good. And when young, good-looking people die and young, good-looking couples get torn apart that way, In terms of what he did as a president, I wasn't born. I know this Cuban Missile Crisis. I think I like the way he handled that. There are things his brother did that I like. What's that?
It's hard to believe. Given the condition he was in, what I was reading about, it's like, how did he get through that?
But, watching this Rock Central thing, business, 30 Rock, whatever it is, Brian Williams thing, interviewing his intern, it was coming out now, where she was like, I was 19. Oh, it's Meredith Vieira did it. I was 19 and I was, you know, fresh. I was coming from this college. She could have been 18, you know, or I don't know. Maybe she was 20. Right. I can't remember. Well, I don't know. Yeah, let's hear little bits and pieces of it. But Gary will put it together. She was 19. She went to the White House. The president sort of called her into the next room and kind of basically started banging her at the White House. But then at a certain point, she started telling these stories where it's like, oh, yeah, we would spend hours down in the pool together. And there'd be president and his brother, whoever would be down there. And then there was this, you know, fat old bald guy who was, you know, Secretary of Commerce or something. And, you know, he told me to go over there and perform oral on him, you know, while we watched, essentially like in the pool.
Whoa. On the fat old guy.
Yeah. I'm sort of paraphrasing, but there's a point where not only is the president banging the 19-year-old who he just started, you know, weeks earlier at the White House while he's the president of the White House, they used to like to go down to the pool and play a little grab ass, and all the dudes are sort of swimming in the pool. Simpler times, man. And he sort of says, like, hey, man, 4 days into her internship, he was fucking her.
But then forcing her to have sex with other guys, that's...
Yeah, like to watch, you know, just wanted to see if she could swim across the pool and go to the Wetsu who was sitting on the steps over there and suck him off. I swear, we will find it. I don't know if it was his brother or there was a few dudes that he was sort of... When the president of the United
States... What does she say now about it? She should be pissed.
You can't judge.
Let's watch.
JFK's intern. It adds another surprising and disturbing layer to John F. Kennedy's presidential portrait.
I don't think what I did at 19, was bad.
Well, she's crying.
You know, the 19-year-old was all right. There was nothing wrong with me.
Well, that's bullshit, crying like that.
Yeah. I'm remembering how enthusiastic I was and how much fun I was to be with. I wasn't after anything.
Imagine if he
wasn't after a job. I wasn't.
Imagine if this was Richard Nixon.
He's just a young
right.
girl.
Almost
Republican
50 years
and
later,
unattractive.
It's still difficult for 68-year-old Mimi Alford to talk
this
about.
This story just came and went.
Most mornings,
the fuck?
When I woke up, I thought, I don't want to get up and write this book. I want to hide under the covers.
In her new book, Once Upon a Secret, she reveals the explicit details of what she says was an 18-month affair with President John F. Kennedy. Her secret was first revealed in 2003, when historian Robert Dalek wrote in his biography of JFK that a tall, slender, beautiful White House intern was rumored to be among the president's many paramours. The revelation prompted inevitable...
You can get to the swimming pool park because this thing's an hour long. If you can find it, find it. It's 30 minutes and it's halfway in or whatever. But, oh, yeah. You can't judge.
No, let's judge.
Listen, I judge. I just go, that's not a great guy, you know. So you can do all you want. Like,
it's bordering on sociopathy, this shit. It really is.
But here's what I'm trying to say, Drew. Here's what I'm trying to say.
It's so funny. We didn't know we were going to have this conversation. I just brought this up.
Michael Jordan has a gambling addiction.
Yeah.
Or had a gambling addiction. Mm. And many of the greats have had addictions and done things behind their wives and this is stepped out. Yeah. Whatever.
Yeah.
Run-ins with the law. Whatever. I separate, and I can separate, the guy... the player on the court from this guy.
Yeah.
You know, so I go, well, I really enjoy Woody Allen movies, but in terms of him running off with his adopted daughter,
not so hot.
Not so hot. So I don't, as a man, I don't respect him. As an artist, I respect him.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Michael Jordan, maybe I don't respect him as a man, but as a basketball
player,
I have to respect
unassailable.
Him. Why can't we separate these things when it comes to John Kennedy?
Because
why does
leaders,
he have to be the greatest and everything's the greatest and it's Camelot?
Well, it's murder.
And,
it's martyrdom. It's martyrdom.
And Jackie Kennedy's the greatest ever. Well, first off, really, she just literally marries Onassis, the Greek tycoon, basically, the shipping magnate. I mean, she just marries like the richest man on the planet who's 30 years older than her. Like, she was in love. Like, what? Aristotle Onassis, what was he, her senior. I can find a picture of him. I mean, he wasn't like a strapping young.
No, no. He was at least 30 or 40 years older, a lot older.
And just fat and good looking. I mean, fat and rich, yeah, right? Yeah. Like, well, so she just married the next richest guy she could find? Like, look, people have, it's sacrilege to speak this way. They're human beings. They have their faults. Right. I don't know if they have to be turned into deities.
Right.
That both are turned into deities. We can find out when they married or when they met or whatever, what their ages were and how, what he was on the Forbes list of richest men, whatever.
When did they marry?
I don't know. There's a lot of stuff that Gary's looking for. Yeah. You tell me. You get rid of. I don't need to see a picture. We can just find out the math on these two. And again, so Drew, is this, if I was just describing this behavior, does this sound
hers or
hey, well, first off, 4 days into the internship, he's banging her.
No, and, it's reprehensible.
And they were married in 68, by the way.
So 4.5 years after her husband died, she's boom.
Well, that's enough time.
It's kind of, I guess.
He was one of the richest men in the world.
He had to meet and court and marry.
There.
In 4 years. Yeah.
Look, he ruined this woman's life.
Jackie's?
No.
Oh, this old
Kennedy ruined her. John Kennedy ruined.
Yes, he severely exploited and abused her. Severely.
Mm-hmm. He offered her a $3 million trust to replace her Kennedy trust she would lose upon his death.
Who?
No, upon his death. I'm sorry. I'm not typing fast enough. Upon his death, she would receive it.
Whose death?
Her husband, Aristotle. Upon his death, she would receive another settlement of $26 million. And $150,000 each year for the rest of her life.
This is what they were. Yeah.
This was the arrangement before they got married.
She married the old guy.
Right, right.
Now, if this is one of your wife's friends, what would you be saying? Hero? You know what I mean? Camelot?
Well, you would go, oh, she was so disturbed by the death of her husband. She's never recovered, and she's making bad decisions. And, you know,
bad decisions is slamming heroin, not finding the richest guy I can find who's 20 years older than me and just marrying him. Look, I'm not here to fucking shit on them. So we'll find out some of that information. You'll be deeply disturbed by some of the JFK antics as far as the 19-year-old. Who, again...
It's really disturbing. I mean, it's so disturbing.
Well, this woman was sort of ruined psychologically by what he'd done.
What happened to her after that? What's in the piece?
Well, you could see her crying while she's doing it. But
I love the way she's like, I'm fine. It was great. I'm fine. It was
she's in love with the president.
Yeah.
She's living, she's in the White House having sex with JFK. Like, again, this is at least a bad decision making. And again, I'm not the guy. I don't say, look, I judge you because you have sinned. I'm more like, if this is your process, like if you cannot control yourself.
Well, how about appreciate that other people have feelings and that you're affecting them? And by the way, I don't mind him. I can see him banging the 19-year-old as part of the overall addiction and all his somatizing. And so that all kind of goes together for me. But when you say go across the pool and blow that guy, now we're into some weird shit. Put that on a loop.
Well, Gary shall find that, which I'm surprised
already. But mind you, that graduates to a new level, you know?
Mm-hmm. Let's take a phone call here. Yeah. And like I said, Gary, I don't know if it was a whole hour-long special or whatever it is, but it's somewhere.
It's a whole hour-long special, but I don't have the whole thing, so I'm having to watch these pieces all the way through.
Okay. Well, hurry up, Gary.
Somewhere in the middle, if it helps. Here's the young lady who is 19 and an intern in the White House explaining what went on in the swimming pool.
He admitted guilty of an unforgivable episode at the White House pool during one of our noonday swims at the end of the summer. Dave Powers was sitting poolside while the president and I swam lazy circles around each other. The president swam over and whispered in my ear. Mr. Powers looks a little tense, he said. Would you take care of it?
Ugh.
It was a dare.
He's a hero, don't you?
But I knew exactly what he meant. Take care of it? That was a challenge to give Dave Powers oral sex. I don't think the president thought I'd do it. But I'm ashamed to say that I did. It was pathetic, a sordid scene. Dave was jolly and obedient as I stood in the shallow end of the pool and performed my duties. The president silently watched. Makes me angry. Does.
Anyway, hero, can't judge.
Wait, what does she say?
Makes you angry because?
Because I didn't just splash water in the president's face and tell him to get lost.
And it makes you sad because?
It makes me sad because I did it.
She's blaming herself.
I think
herself.
I wanted to please the president.
I find it appalling. Why would...
Who's that guy? Okay. Who's he?
I fucking know everyone on TV.
She's invested in the character.
The point is this. It didn't come up a lot during the 50th anniversary. I judge. I really do. I just think that's amoral behavior.
It goes to another level.
But I'm not a religious person. I just go, that's not a guy.
Forget the religion.
I don't respect
that's just,
that.
That's just psychologically, psychiatrically, that's somebody without their moral, their ability to judge right and wrong. It affects on other people. All that's off. It's off.
Yeah, plus the noonday swim. We got to get in on that noonday swim.
Makes the golfing look like,
I know.
You know what I'm saying?
Lazy circles.
Yeah. Wow. What happened to running countries? I don't know how
now,
it goes.
The whole judge not now, I mean, ask not, which you can do,
right.
Has a whole new meaning to it for me.
All right. Please, Aristotle Onassis, his age, and Jackie Kennedy's
They're
age.
23 years apart, and they married 5 years after the assassination.
But she was, and he was... That'd be interesting. But 23 years apart.
She's probably about 35.
Huh? Could have been. And, you know, they all want 60-year-olds.
Yeah.
And I don't know if he was one of the top 10 richest men on the planet at the time.
Yeah.
You could figure that one out, too. But he was 62.
62.
Yes.
A spry 62.
A spry.
Look at those big, fat, thick glasses.
A youthful.
Horn-rimmed glasses.
And you know how much young... especially
Lazar glasses.
You know how much young women are attracted to guys who are in shipping,
especially if old fat guys in shipping.
They love it.
It's it can't resist.
Guys with thick glasses are into shipping. So an aphrodisiac. It wasn't about the money. They have a love of container movement.
They didn't have those kind of containers then.
They just love the shipping.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Longshoremen.
That's right. All right.
Oh, Lord.
All right.
Lord have mercy.
Now I know.
Talk to Morella.
Yeah, we're all dicks, but that's just the way I approach life.
Being a dick?
I don't, you know, look, everyone says, you know, we're all God's creatures and no one is above this and you're not supposed to look at that and this person anymore differently and every child, no child left behind. Okay, let's do that with the Kennedys. Let's do that with everybody.
Sure.
We're judging them. There's checks and balances. There's things they did where you go, okay, that's a good thing. And then there are things they did where you go, okay, that's a bad thing. Aren't we allowed to do that? That's what I'm doing. And when I hear about this sort of behavior, it troubles me.
You know what's weird? People love to like tear down Abraham Lincoln. They love to like, oh, he slept in a bed with her, you know, the man. And not even as a sense of tearing him down, as a sense of that trying to unearth his human qualities.
Yes.
By the way, he had a paranoid preoccupation with syphilis. Lincoln had some real serious shit going on. He was depressive. He was on mercury and made him more depressed and bipolar quality. He never did shit like this.
Yeah.
Ever.
To be fair, I think they had a pond. At the White House back then, it would have been a pond.
Mud pit.
And we're back with Adam and Drew Show, episode 321, titled Earthquakes. This one aired in March of 2016. Adam and Drew opened the show discussing earthquakes in Los Angeles. And then towards the end, they get into Drew's story of some interesting activities that happened while he was driving with his wife.
She's a hell of a woman, Susan.
The less said, the better. Roll the clip.
By the way, just use eaten by a shark or hit by lightning. I think hit by lightning, that's a standard one we can all go for.
Speaking of, we had a weird thing happen in our neighborhood this last weekend. You know, there are apps now, I guess, where kids can like mass parties.
Sure.
Like, yeah. Well, something happened in our neighborhood where we're driving. We have a sleepy, dark, quiet neighborhood, and we're coming up the hill and drove into a mass of humanity. And as I was driving up, I saw like a helicopter. I'm like, I'm thinking, that's kind of weird. I bet that – could that be over our house? Now, my wife and I were engaged in like affectionate play at the moment.
In the car?
Wait.
That okay. close to the house?
What? It's just weird, a dark street where, you know.
And wow. Drew, I've said it once. You're a man of exquisite passion.
Drove into cops and a mass of humanity.
All right. I'm going to guess you were driving.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it'd be insanely dangerous. Wow. You think texting is bad?
I know, right?
Put that on the freeway sign. Jesus Christ, Drew.
I know, right?
What passion you have.
That's pathetic.
I love it. You're so close to your house. So all right. Anyway. Jeez. Anyway. Kids in the back seat?
No. They were in the front with us.
You are receiving pleasure while driving your vehicle up your street.
Yeah.
And did she start in the restaurant?
No.
How does this work? Because I know you. You're coming from Old Town Pasadena. Like, the range isn't that far.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you'll be in the house and...
It's fine. What are you going to do?
Okay.
The streets, speed limit's 15 miles an hour. How bad could
it get? So, you run into this mass of humanity.
Yeah.
What are they doing?
They're breaking the party up. Because that helicopter, I was like, what is a good idea? A helicopter over our neighborhood. What planet? We'd been there 2 hours before.
No, but what is the mass...
They're evacuating.
Must have been a funny conversation.
With the cops?
No, with the mass of humanity that was out in the street. Or even the cops. Like the two cops talking later that night by the locker room. Hey, did you guys see Dr. Drew pull up? Yeah, him and his wife pulled up. No, he was alone. No, he pulled up with his wife. I saw him and his wife sitting in the car right after. Listen, Tim, hand of God, I'm a cop. He pulled up alone. He was the only person in the car. Look, I went over there 10 minutes after you saw him. You went to the other side to throw some pepper spray out. I talked to his wife.
Yeah, yeah.
She was in the car. She's scratching her chin. I don't know. She's using her sleeve on her chin. But what do you mean? I'm telling you, Bob, he was alone. This is what I do for a living. I surveil. You understand? Dr. Drew pulled up, had a huge smile on his face. He seemed to be sweating about the forehead and brow quite a bit.
I've never seen a crowd like that in the neighborhood before.
His seat almost fully reclined. I couldn't even see it was him initially. But he brought the seat back up. I remember at some point he pulled out a piece of jerky and he seemed to feed it to his lap. That is the part that seemed peculiar. It seemed like he was going to have a bite of that granola bar, and then all of a sudden he just sort of dropped it on his lap. But anyway, then he handed some Gatorade down to his lap as well. But anyway, he was alone. There's nobody in the passenger seat. Tim, this is going to come to blows. I went and talked to he and his wife. Okay, that's all I'm saying. I'm not lying to you. Well, we'll have to agree to disagree, because he was alone when he pulled up.
10,000 kids walked down the street. And five cop cars and a helicopter. And our street is like a driveway. You know, it's a little tiny little street.
Well, what was going on?
I guess so. I know there's some sort of high school age kids down this couple of the houses there. And I think they had one of those app, you know, gatherings. Like, it's happening.
Mm-hmm.
And it must have happened within an hour and broken up within an hour. It's crazy.
Oh, it's an happening.
Right. Ooh.
And it's just one of those... Whitey Wilding kind of things. Like, everyone just shows up. What?
It was weird.
What were these things called?
Man,
are these things called?
They were remarkably well behaved.
They have a thing. It was all the rage 5 years ago.
And
remember?
The cops had a huge smile on their face. Maybe it was because of what you're talking
everyone
about.
Everyone was showing up. They do a whole thing where everyone would show up at the Galleria.
Mob?
Yeah, the flash mob.
Yeah.
They'd all show up and they do the hustle or something.
Yeah. Or also people would say, you know, hey, I'm going to be signing autographs here or whatever. Show up and say hi to me.
Right. Yeah. All right, so that's what happened to Dr. Ross. That's pretty good. I hope that's a weekend.
Of course.
Okay, I don't know if that's
doing that during the week.
That's on the schedule in the week, Drew. It's a damn good Wednesday.
All right, we're back, and we have yet another clip for you. This one comes to you from Adam and Drew's show, episode 446. This was released back in October of 2016, and this features Anderson Cowan, the Liberace of the potentiometers. What do you remember about this one, Gary?
So I can't remember if this was one of the first times that we had Anderson on the show.
First time on ADS, and he'd already been on the ACS or the Film Vault. It depends on how you view that problematic recording.
Right. So I did not know Anderson very well at this point. This was one of the first times that I had him on a show that I was actually intimately involved in producing. And I remember just being a little starstruck, for lack of a better term. Not that Anderson's the biggest star in the world, but, you know, for a Loveline fan, it's like, oh my God, this is the guy. And it was sort of a realization of like, oh, this is my counterpart. Like, I'm the guy he yells at now. This is the guy he used to yell at then. Like, it was a weird
Error
kind
apparent.
Of meeting of the minds. Yeah, but Anderson was a super sweet guy, and I remember this being a fun episode.
Yeah, I was rooting for this to happen because Anderson was promoting Groupers, his first feature film. He'd always been an aspiring filmmaker throughout his entire run at Loveline, and he came on this to promote the crowdfunding campaign, which was successful, and the film is now set to premiere in just a couple of months.
Oh, wow. I didn't even know that it was finally coming to fruition. I remember that he was promoting that, and I remember also noticing for the first time, it was probably one of the first times I'd spent any time around him in person, the giant film strip that he has tattooed going all the way around and up one of his forearms. I just remember thinking, like, that's dedication. This guy's not messing around. He likes films.
Most people mistake that for a snake. It's a running joke, especially when he was in county lockup one time. I mostly wanted Anderson to reunite with the guys because he was always, to me, as a listener, like their angry stepson. Like, Adam and Drew were like this couple, and they had this angry stepson who hated them and was angry about everything. And I wanted to have him on air to see that they actually really all like each other. And it's actually surprisingly pleasant, and they're very kind to each other. So roll the clip, Gary.
Yeah, we're back. Anderson Cowan here, producer, director, wait a minute, engineer. Anderson, you know him from way back in the day of Lovelines and way up in the day in Lovelines. He's crowdfunding a project.
Way up and way back.
Way back and up. How many years in total, Anderson?
On Loveline?
Yeah.
Just shy of 17.
Jesus. Drew, what you have?
35.
Jesus. He's got me beat by a little bit.
I had just over a little over 10, maybe.
Think of it. I'd been there 18 years when Anderson got there.
Anderson's, and he's there 17 Shit. Years. Anderson's.
Is this a clean show?
No, well, say no. whatever you want. Anderson's doing a movie. He's crowdfunding a movie. It's called Groupers.
Yeah.
I saw the online ask. It was well done. Most of those things are not very well done.
Oh, thanks, Adam.
So you can go to groupersthemovie.com. I didn't. Now, is it through one of the crowdsourcing companies?
Yes.
Which one?
I chose Seed and Spark, which I had never heard of before, but I stumbled across them because I thought that we just had a baby. My wife and
That's
I just had a baby.
That's what I want to talk about.
And we had a registry, right? And I was thinking about the movie. I was thinking about the baby. We had the baby registry. And I was thinking all these crowdfunding campaigns that I've seen. I've never seen one where you could actually register for a movie. Like, why don't we're looking for this amount of money to be able to fund the actors. I thought that it was really interesting, and I thought that I had created this whole new thing, and I was excited about it, so I did a quick little Google search. Turns out these two ladies already invented it 5 years ago on a site called Seed and Spark. So I ended up falling in love with them and going with them.
So it's like, we need to pay for a lighting package.
Yes.
We need... And so it is like
saying,
like
we need a crock pot.
That's an interesting, that's a very
interesting
thing.
I thought it was genius. I thought I was onto something, and I thought it was going to be a whole other like revenue stream, maybe down, like a whole other business model that I could do. But it turns out usually good ideas have already been created by somebody else.
Yeah, I found that as well a few times. So the movie's already raised quite a bit of money, like 50-something thousand bucks.
We're a little bit past the two-thirds mark. We're going for 75K.
Nice.
And what do you? What length is the movie?
It'll be 90 minutes.
So it'll be a full-length movie.
Yeah.
Give us the premise.
The premise is it's all about bullying and homophobia and group mentality and mob mentality, which you guys know me. You know that I absolutely can't stand mob mentality. I don't think any of us can. And the premise, the opening of the film is a younger woman in her mid to early 20s. She goes to a bar. She picks up on these two young kids. They're probably 19, 20. We find out later they got into the bar with fake IDs. And she lures them back to her van. They're thinking threesome time.
Right.
They're thinking this is awesome. She ends up overpowering them with some really fancy driving and a gas mask and a canister. It's going to be a fun action scene to shoot. And she subdues them. And then they wake up strung together face to face at the bottom of an empty pool. And an abandoned house.
Mm-hmm.
And they're facing one another. They come to. She uses some smelling salts, wakes them up. And she says, hey, you two have been torturing my little gay brother for years in school and saying that homosexuality is nothing but a choice. Well, here's your chance to prove your little theory. You guys have to be gay for one another before I let you go. That's the jumping off point.
I don't know if you saw Drew in the Olsen Twins movie, but he's got chops.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking for him as one of the guys.
Can we make him look young enough?
I like the I like the premise. And for you, $75,000 is a good chunk, but it's not a lot in the movie making world.
No, it's not at all.
How do you budget this out?
If I was smarter, Adam, I would have come up with a cheap idea to shoot a movie probably 10 years ago. But I'm not that bright, and I just write whatever comes to mind. And I just started writing this one, and it occurred to me, like, on page 30, I'm like, oh, my God, I'm writing something really cheap for the first time. This is the first movie I've ever written, first script I've ever written, where I could actually make it with just, you know,
how do you
people helping.
How do you budget it, though?
You get people that are smart with numbers and crunching it. So somebody the first thing we did is I put my script into a producer who budgeted it all out.
Got it.
He gave me a budget from $65,000 to $105,000.
What are you going to shoot it on?
A lot of
it's
leeway.
Digital, right?
Probably an Alexa. I would love to shoot some stuff on actual film. That's a goal for later.
What's
down
an
the
Alexa?
Road.
It's
and
a
Alexa's
camera.
Like, it's a camera. It shoots 2K. It's what I shot all my shorts on. It looks good. It's theatrical release. It looks really good.
How about those new Red cameras?
Red cameras are good, too, but my DP is really proficient on the Alexas. My DP, fortunately, has been working in the business for forever. He works on all the Christopher Nolan stuff. He just got back from Europe. He worked on the new Dunkirk movie
DP,
in the camera department.
Director of photography?
Director of photography, yeah.
Oh, there's a Dunkirk movie.
Yeah, it's coming. It'll be here next summer.
The Red gets hot. That's one of the things.
That's why they call it the Red.
You got to stop because it overheats.
Wow, interesting.
So it's hard to.
All these cameras
shoot.
Are so big and bulky, and like you know, 10 years from now they're going to be a joke, and they're going to be free essentially.
So when what are some of the rewards then?
Having some fun with some of the rewards, like the $25 one, is essentially just like you want to see this thing, and you're going to buy a ticket and like a digital link to it beforehand. Mm-hmm. So $25 gets you a ticket to the first screening for the supporters that I'm going to have once it's done, as well as a link to the actual movie. And then like the $50 range, you'll get you like a T-shirt. Cold Cockle Productions
These
is my production
t-shirts.
Company.
Look at that.
I brought you one, Adam. Here,
thank
you. Go.
You.
These are very cool t-shirts.
Cold Cockle Production T-shirt, as well as an embroidered patch. And some stickers, just a you know, a little how do you do.
I am, ironically, this week on Friday, I will be finishing the last of whatever the crowd promises I did on my movie. Which
wow. Oh, you still haven't done all that?
Well, what happened was is they go like, hey, we're coming to Chicago. We're doing a screening in Chicago. Come to the screening in Chicago. And then you get an email from someone and they go, I moved to Dallas. And then you go... Well, technically, this is on you,
it
but
is, absolutely.
If I'm coming to Dallas, and you'll get this, too, at some point, you'll make another movie, and you'll do another one of these things, and you'll want the person from Dallas thinking, well, he did come out, and we had drinks before the show in Dallas, and he did fulfill this thing, even though this person, I think, moved from one of the towns we're in, but you do the best you can.
Well, when you did yours, I mean, how do you even know the number of people that actually contributed by the end of it?
I don't have the grand total. We could figure it out. I think it was, you know, for some reason, I had the number like 13,000 or something
about right, yeah.
Jumps into my mind. It's Drew. It's totally insane, especially if you come from where I come from, when you crowdfund one of these things. And you go online, you go hot, you know, you put it up.
Yeah.
And you want to talk about the funnest thing in the world. I mean, if it's going right,
yeah.
You'd look at the thing and it'd be like, oh, we're at $61,000. That's cool. And then you'd go out and kind of go about your day and kind of forget about it a little bit. And you'd come back and you're just like, oh, we're 267.
Jeez.
And like we just went out. You're like, oh my God. And then you'd wake up the next morning. We're at 555. Like you're like overnight. Like crazy.
Yeah, this is what
really crazy stuff.
Really rich people who play the stock market must feel like. I think every time I'm looking at it, I'm thinking this is what people who have a lot of stocks are feeling.
Yeah, it's just you've never seen anything like it. You don't have anything to compare it to. Yeah. But I mean, we raised like $1.4 million or something, and it was a fairly short period
of
time. And there was some times where it'd go up $100,000 or $200,000 in a day.
Crazy.
It was crazy, but then we did have to fulfill, which is like me standing in someone's backyard doing stand-up.
That wasn't. Did you agree to that? Who came up with that? I can't picture you sitting down coming up with the perks. Who came up with your perks?
I basically said, whatever anyone else did before us is fine with us. But I really have this thing where it's, and I've done it way more than once. I come to your house, I'll stand in your living room, and I do a 45-minute comedy set.
Wow.
And my whole thing is sort of like, I'm not put off coming from where I come from that somebody goes, it's my husband's, it's his 40th birthday, I bought the $10,000 perk, it's huge, he's going to go nuts. Like, I can't be put off by that.
Yeah, yeah.
Feel the stress of like wanting to deliver?
No. The idea that somebody would care enough to do something so thoughtful and interesting, Adam, it blows his head up. Right?
Oh.
Yeah. mind exploded.
Well, what I mean is like I don't want to spend Friday night in your living room. And yes, I do feel a certain amount of pressure. Like there's a bunch of in-laws standing around who have no idea who I am. Like I can't
keep
just show up and keep it clean. Stuff.
Right.
There is that. But there's the part where it's like, where the wife is going, thank you, thank you, thank you. And I'm like, thank you, thank me.
Free.
You paid me a bunch of money for a birthday present. Like, I sat at a table where people are like, be quiet, don't talk. Like my whole childhood, who could do this? So some of them are basic. What's the most exotic reward?
$10,000, which no one has gotten, and I don't expect anyone to get it, but that gives you full, in the movie world, producer is the number one, bigger than executive producer. Producer is number one, and if this movie goes on to win an Oscar, which I intended to, they actually get the Oscar.
So you go to groupersthemovie.com for the crowdfunding?
I was joking there, by the way. I don't believe this movie's going to win
groupersthemovie.com, right?
Yeah.
But certainly, Sundance, not out of the question.
No.
Depending on the timing. Because
this is the kind of movie that, Sundance, this is the first thing I've written where it's like, it's definitely got a cause behind it.
Yeah, if you got a good theme and a good cause and a good anti-gay or anti-bullying or anti-gay bullying or whatever it is, it helps.
You guys ever see Black, I know we're going to go to a call, but you guys ever see Black Mirror, the show out of the UK?
No.
All about, it's like the closest thing to the Twilight Zone. Mm. It's a great show. Season 3 just got released on Netflix. It's a fantastic show. It's very dark dystopian future about about technology really taking a turn for the worst and screwing us. And it occurred to me that Groupers is a cross between Black Mirror and South Park. It's definitely like those two are the major influences.
Maybe a dusting of Red State in there.
Definitely, years of experience of working with you guys on Loveline and hearing the calls and hearing all the issues that are going on out there. There's no way I can write this thing if I wasn't sitting there for all those years with you guys.
Well, it's weird. We always had this thought of the future with the robot that was going to turn on us.
Yeah.
But it's not the robot. It's us turning on us using the technology.
Yeah.
Right.
Communicating with the technology and then us turning on.
That's what Black Mirror is all about. You got to watch that. I think you'd really like it.
All right, we're back. Adam, Drew, Anderson reunited once again. And now we have another clip for you coming all the way from November 2017. Adam and Dr. Drew Show, episode 720. Not the 900, where Adam always mistakes the skateboarding trick. This one's titled Mobile Rape Capsule. Adam and Drew open the show talking to Caller about 80s and 90s music, leading to a conversation about the 1970s fad of custom vans with beds in the back. And this is basically just Adam and Drew talking about custom vans, basically Chevy vans, and all the accoutrements.
Yeah, that was a fun episode of searching through for different pictures of more and more extreme ones that proved Adam's point and blew Drew's mind. I don't really know why. I mean, after we saw the second or third one, I remember Drew just being astonished when I throw up the seventh and eighth one. I'm like, oh my God, that's real. Like, or stuff like that. So, this was a fun one to go through on the picture side of things, which I know isn't always the best pod, but it's fun to go back and look as you're listening on the website.
Agreed. And this ties into their years of riffing about statutory rock, Gary Puckett's Young Girl, all these different songs that came out in the 70s that were all about trying to woo underage women. And this ties directly into that. So, Gary, roll the clip.
Drew, what bands do you like? Like Scotty Snotty and the Hankies?
Yeah, of course. They were my prom band.
No. You like Looking Glass?
Blues Traveler.
No, not
one.
Blues
they
Traveler.
Were, they were the other. They were, but no, they
no,
were the other prom
no,
band.
You're saying Blues
oh, you're
Traveler.
Right, you're right.
Blues
pardon.
Image.
Blues Image. Yes, yes.
Blues Image.
Blues Traveler was
73 yeah. men sailing yes. on a San Francisco Bay.
So
Ride, Captain, ride upon your mystery ship. There's a lot of weird nautical songs in the 70s.
Even Christopher Cross.
Yeah,
that was Ride Like the Wind.
Da 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 da. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right.
73. How many guys? Was it 73? Mm-hmm. On a San Francisco Bay.
73 men sailed up.
Yeah. So when my wife says to me, no, I told you 7:30 the movie started. I went, you said 7. No, 7:30. Believe me, I said 7:30. No, I heard you say 7, and that's what I remember. Nah, I'm pretty sure I said 7. Who do we believe in that exchange? Drew, you with me?
No, I know not to question the Corolla Steel Trap. But I was sitting here thinking.
They played your prom?
Oh, yeah.
How many times did they do the song? Like 11?
I remember it coming kind of at the end. Yeah. Yeah, I think they had three other songs.
Ride, Captain, ride. Yeah. Drew probably longing for a custom van about then.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Of course.
Custom van. Van that was custom.
Oh, God.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm thinking, still back, my head's back at that.
Vans were so popular, there was a movie called The Van, just about vans. That's how popular the vans were.
And by the way, they should have just called them rape containers. rape capsules.
Mobile rape capsules.
Yeah, mobile rape capsules.
Yeah, like, you know what a bookmobile is?
Yeah.
Inner city kids
yes.
with books? This is that with rape.
Yes, they were mobile rape capsules, and all the songs
there's
you
a
hear
lot of young ladies who can't get out to the rape centers. We bring them. This is us.
MRC.
Yeah, they have the thing. They have the book. They have the bloodmobile. They're coming to take the blood because people can't get to the hospital. A lot of folks.
Yeah.
A lot of lower middle class folks can't get out to the rape emporiums. We bring you the rape mobile.
Bring you the penises.
That's mobile right.
Penis. I'll tell you this, Drew. I drove a minivan in college. It did not have the same effect.
No.
You
were driving
a minivan.
It was the
damn
mini.
We're talking about. Here's what we're talking about. Talking about a van with a bed in the back. That's what we're talking about. Seriously.
Oftentimes.
Chris is looking at me like I'm speaking some
water bed.
Oh.
Go look up pictures of like.
And a picture of a white tiger on the side of the, bed.
Or Norseman, like a Viking on there.
Or a giant like Tahitian.
The airbrush painting.
The guy yes. Boris, you know, the guy yeah. do the chick riding the snow leopard yeah. with the bikini yes. made of pewter. Super practical. Just Google in. Custom 70s van and then do an image search and you will see
interiors
well,
too. It's
yeah,
all it's carpeted it, carpeted all the inside right every inch is carpeted except
yeah.
for the bed
yeah and then you shall
no
yeah
oh,
that's
go,
right
go,
you
yeah.
shall see what a custom van looked like and when you get to the inside that's where the bar and the captain's yeah. chairs
I
the
made
water
one of those
bed.
With my minivan I took out the captain's chairs I cleared out the back I put a rug in there.
Right. Sweet.
Nobody right. cared.
There, look at the interior of these things. Look at this.
Yeah, man. Oh, it's a sweet ride.
There it is.
Sweet. A lot of plushness.
A lot of crushed velvet.
A lot of crushed velvets and TV sets.
It's
and...
so disgusting. Nothing was ever that nice. It was always there was the captain's chairs.
Nothing ever worked.
It's really just a mattress on a carpet.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Somebody discovered shag carpet, and then somebody figured... Hey, we can put shag carpet everywhere. Like, we don't have to just put it in your house. We'll yeah. put it on the roof of your van. We'll put it inside the van. We'll put it up the wall.
Yeah.
And everyone just went nuts with shag, right?
Yeah. Which was the dirtiest, filthiest, shittiest carpet of all time.
I just couldn't imagine. It's the opposite.
I remember people raking their carpets.
Oh, yeah.
All right, and we're now back for our final clip of this very special 1,000th episode spectacular. Again, if you'd like to hear these full episodes, Podcast One Premium, you can access the full archive. You can go back and be your own superfan Giovanni.
Yes, you can. Before we intro this clip and play it out, Gio, what are your thoughts on the Adam and Drew show? Like, what is it that you love? What do you like about it? You know, what do you look forward to? You know, just from a fan perspective.
Well, I know everything about the show, so it's hard to not analyze recording and release schedule and incorporate that into my reaction to the show versus other people's. I liked the 1 hour format when it was just two taped back to back, but I like to save them up and listen together because it felt like one giant fat love line. And now when they do the 5 day a week, I know what the recording session is, so what I try to do is match up what the recording is and then pair them together and listen as one giant show. But I get so desperate because I love the show so much, I can't ever really do that, so I end up listening day and date as soon as they post. And I like the variety. So I like that one episode is calls. I like the next episode is some news story complaining about golfing. I like that the next episode is completely different from that. It's the heir to Loveline. And my favorite part of Loveline was Adam and Drew just talking before the callers came on, or in between when they weren't talking to callers, and they just got off topic, and they would just kind of get lost for 20 or 30 minutes. And it was very rare to happen on Loveline because of the commercial breaks, and the most you get is like 15, 18 minutes on a topic. And I find the Adam and Drew show is perfect. They can just deep dive whenever they want, take calls whenever there's calls. And, you know, every third episode is laugh out loud hilarious, and then you get a lot of interesting stuff in there, too. I think it's a perfect blend. The only thing I would change, maybe if I change anything, is I would adjust the release and recording schedule so other people weren't bumped by it, but it seems like a very small complaint.
Yeah, I agree that there is that. For those who don't know, you alluded to it a little bit, the Adam and Dr. Drew show, as it exists today, is recorded 1 3.5-hour session that we then break into 5 shows. So if you can hold off the way Gio was talking about and listen to all 5 of them as a block, you can sort of watch how the conversation evolves. It's a little bit different than if you listen to it day to day because it just feels like a bigger break and like new topics and stuff like that. But if you listen to the whole block, you can sort of hear how their day evolves and how their conversation changes. And it's a little interesting, but
it's very nuanced. Yeah, well, that's something people don't usually pick up on. So they'll be like, why are they still talking about this topic 3 days in a row? And it's like, well, no, they exactly. talked about it for 45 minutes. You're not doing the math in your head to understand that. So some people get bumped by it, but I really enjoy that part of the show.
Right. A perfect example is the shows that you will hear in the week to come. You know, tomorrow, Adam asks me for a clip from Meet the Press, and I can't remember if it takes me until Wednesday or Thursday, but it's one of the two because he just gives me this one specific thing he saw on Meet the Press, and it was so minor and not really notable or searchable that I wasn't able to find a clip of it. I just had to sit there and watch Meet the Press. I sped it up a little bit, but I had to watch. And as it turned out, it was no shit the last sentence that he said before he signed off. And there was no way to know that. I don't think Adam knew that. I think Adam saw a clip, you know, promoting the show or something. So he just saw that one moment. So he didn't know it was at the end of the show. So I had to watch 45 minutes worth of Meet the Press before I finally got to this clip, and then it eventually gets paid off. So yes, if people are wondering why we're still talking about that 4 days later, that's why. I can only watch Meet the Press so fast.
Yeah. And Gary doesn't actually take 4 days to find something.
It's no, I don't. Time. No, I try to do it as real time as I can. It's just if it's, hey, in this episode that's an hour long, there's this thing said, and it happens to be the last thing, it's going to take me a while to get there.
If you had asked me in any year before the show existed, any time before 2012, hey, would you want a show with Adam and Dr. Drew? I'd say yes immediately. And they'd think, wait. With Michael Narron artwork. Yes, I'm saying yes. No. Produced by Gary, sometimes Chris and Matt. Just this really great show with the Cruel Digital staff you love the most. Would you want to hear this? I've been over the moon. And I feel like the show's delivered on top of delivering. And the 5 days a week is a really nice way to have Adam and Drew with you every single day. Whereas was when it was just twice a week, it was great, but there was huge gaps where you didn't have Adam and Drew talking.
Well, thank you, Gio. We love doing it, and I'm very glad that it gratifies me when you like something, because you are the hardcorest of the hardcore and have no lack of a library of past Adam and Drew to go back to if you want to. So I'm glad that you like it. We like it. We enjoy doing it. And I think that's enough of us talking about ourselves and being proud of ourselves. I think we should go into our final clip. There you go. We'll do it again for 2,000, Gio. Sound good?
Yeah, 2,000. Well, actually, there's 2,635 Loveline episodes with Adam and Drew of their era. Adam missed all about right. 100 and Drew missed about 200. And then there's some best of in there, too. So really, it's somewhere around 2,400. So if you guys pass 2,400, you surpass Loveline.
2,401. We'll do this again. How about that?
That sounds good. And this next clip is Adam and Drew Show, 829. This comes to us from May of 2018. The title is The Power to Extrude. And to close out the episode, I thought it'd be fun to have Adam and Drew talking about either brewing or some other activity Adam got up to with his buddies that Drew was endlessly fascinated by. And that's why we got The Power to Extrude, which, if you're familiar, this is Adam and Drew talking about extruding.
Yeah, I got the caboose backed up to the jacuzzi jet on more than one occasion.
And your initial offering, was it shared with others? Did you do the move that Ray would do and stand over them and share? Like from the coping
that
of the
was
school?
Just the one girl the one time. And it was kind of the fault of
the victim.
The luck. When you see a young gal, she's wearing a short skirt, and she's like, she was drinking too much at the party, and she passed out, and the rugby team had their way with her, and they try to blame the victim.
Wow.
I'm not for that.
You know,
hold on,
there's
Drew.
A whole new
hear
movement.
Me out. Hear me
but
out.
I'm just saying, it's
speaking
me too.
Of movement,
for you guys, it's me poo.
Now, look, I would never condone that. If that girl wants to wear a short skirt.
Hashtag me poo.
That girl wants to wear a short skirt. Or she wants a drink, that is her business, and she should be able to walk home in safety. And in no way, shape, or form, she deserved that or bring
but,
that upon
her. But her head was at
but
coping
if
level.
If you were in a jacuzzi, and it's an in-ground jacuzzi.
Yes, yes, yes.
And
you're loaded up and walking by, and there's a head floating
I'm
above.
I'm sorry, that's your fault.
I would agree.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, you should just keep your head submerged. Out of the line of fire.
I'm sorry. Look, my daughter said the same thing to her. Right here, right now.
I wonder if that's the robots at Westworld would ever do this. They're right. The humans are different than the Westworld robots.
I got to believe they'd rust out. The jacuzzi water can be pretty corrosive.
Did your offering, was it the Ray style of direct dropping upon the head?
I remember... No.
Okay.
I had way too much decorum for that.
You shot it across the coping.
There you go.
Into her back of her head.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was like Sir Walter Raleigh.
Of course. Yes. Big hat with
remember,
a feather in
I
it.
I remember a couple things. I threw my cape down over Ray's jacuzzi ass juice. So a woman could walk
she
across.
Walk across, of course. And took your head off and swung it across. Like, this right this way, m'lady.
My cape down. I remember you could fill up in this jacuzzi like quite easily.
You mentioned that once or twice.
How easy it was, number one.
That
I
must
remember
have been nice.
That feeling of being full up quick was like it was a quick fill.
Good.
And I remember that feeling. I also remember the feeling of the power. You know what I mean? I know what it feels like
power
now to own a gun. No, so, not the jet.
Oh, the power which you had in your possession.
Yeah, yes.
You were walking around with like a 630-06 loaded, ready to go, already cocked.
Yeah, yeah. And then a certain urgency, like no talent.
That's shocking. And it's not an exact science. When you tell those smooth muscles to go time, there could be a little delay sometimes.
Yeah.
Ever caught with your pants down?
And my recollection was that when it was time to go, it was time to go.
Yeah, there was no waiting.
Yeah. But it was pretty doable. And
think about the fact that you'd be arrested today for that.
I think nobody would believe it. I think it'd be so bizarre and sensational that people just could never believe squirting water out of your ass. But, you know, we didn't have video games.
Right, I get it.
We had to make do.
All right, we're back. That was the 1,000th Adam and Drew Show Spectacular. I was your co-host along with Gary Patrick Smith, my favorite Corolla Digital producer. Don't tell Chris.
Thank you, sir. Please feel free to share this episode with your friends and family. Let's try to end Adam and Drew's vexation that no one... seems to know that they are still broadcasting every single day of the week. Gio, where can people find your podcast?
I do The Love Between the Two Hosts as a podcast on YouTube and on the web. If you want to check out the YouTube channel, The Love Between the Two Hosts, I upload things that you might be interested in.
There you go. I would encourage anyone who enjoyed this to go check that out, because Gio is a wealth of information. Tomorrow, you will hear us back with a normal show. I'll be looking for something from Meet the Press that I definitely won't find tomorrow, but I will later in the week. And it's a great week of shows. I think you guys are going to love it. And on behalf of Adam and Drew, thank you to everyone who has listened day in and day out. This first 1,000 is just the first of many more to come. So thank you very much.
Mahalo.